It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey there, Butte County. Jason Cassidy here, interim editor of the Chico News and Review newspaper and your host for the Chico News and Review radio show, which is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Drunken Dumpling in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at drunkendumplingchico.com, where we love food, flavor, and our community. And by Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party's been providing friendly service for over 30 years at 337 Broadway Street, and Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling Cotton Party at 893-4923. On today's show, we will talk to writer Ken Smith about dramatic new developments in the local homelessness issue. We'll also check out the latest music from Big Mo and the Full Moon Band, but first, a special guest feature. The following segment was produced by local activist, journalist, and longtime KZFR programmer Guillermo Mash as part of his latest grassroots media and civic engagement endeavor, Imagining Community. Mash's project is primarily focused on environmental issues, and for the past couple of weeks, he's been following the back roads and trails along the Sacramento River to document the efforts of the Sac Source to Sea project, which the three women behind it call an open-minded, fun, and educational journey in which they aim to deepen their personal connections to the river and learn more about the diverse stakeholders who share an interest in California's longest river. For this segment, Mash interviews one of the three adventurers, Alyssa Winkleman.
Guillermo Mash here with Imagining Community, reporting a special KZFR Chico News and Review on the radio segment on the successful Sacramento Source to Sea kayak trip by Mount Shasta residents Alyssa Winkleman and Ari Kossel, who, along with Alaskan filmmaker Jamie Trapp, completed a 21-day Sacramento River paddle at the Golden Gate Bridge on April 3rd. The crew had to change their plans for rafting from the Box Dam at Lake Siskiyou downstream approximately 25 miles to the unincorporated community of Castella, due in large to the low flows below the dam. Imagining Community talked with Winkleman on Monday, April 12th, about the low water levels experienced during the entirety of their trip.
For this time of the year, especially on the Upper Sac, the flow is much greater typically, and spending time on the Upper Sac rafting, I have always seen it quite a bit higher, and so that's what I expected. But then down below Shasta Dam, I expected a little bit more of a consistent flow, and that was a pretty big surprise, I would say, because you know, talking with other folks who've done that stretch below Shasta Dam down, they all agreed that the river was moving pretty fast. But then once we started getting further down and then just talking to farmers and fishermen, they were just like, no, this is so low for this time of year. The folks in the Delta were like highly concerned about it because, you know, they have all their pumps to irrigate their land and their pumps were barely in the water. I mean, they were almost out of water. And it's scary because paddling across Shasta Lake, I think Shasta Lake is 88 feet below the rim. So it's really low. And when we talked with the Shasta Dam manager, he said they were at 50% and they didn't expect to be any higher this year. And while rainfall is really good for the river's flow, having a big snowpack is what really keeps us going and keeps the river moving. And yeah, it's scary. It's not what it should be for this time of year. I mean, if you look at Mount Shasta, I mean, this winter we got a decent amount of snow, but it was so windy that it all just blew off. So there's like really not much snow on the mountain. And there's a little more snow in the eddies and, you know, the surrounding mountains, but it was a windy year. So it's like that's another interesting factor you have to take into consideration is even if we do get a decent amount of snow, if it's windy, then that snow just blows away, you know?
Winkleman shared her observations on water conservation within the Chico agricultural community from Sacramento source to seas, 2 nights stay in the area.
The area that we did see in Chico stayed at CSA Grub Farm, and they're clearly very aware of their water use and growing crops that are not super high water intensity. And then again, at Llano Seco, you know, they are the oldest water rights holder on the SAC, and they use a lot less water than they need to. And they're doing that because they're intentionally growing and raising crops and animals that are less water intensive. You know, they're raising pork, so, or pigs. So, you know, pigs don't take a ton of water to raise. It felt like in, you know, the small context of the Chico farming that we saw, people are aware of it. And that's great because by the time the river gets to Chico, there's still not a ton of water that's come into it. And so, the further up the river you go, the more water you take, there's less water to make it down to the delta and the ocean. I think we were lucky to talk to farmers that were really aware of it. And in the same respect, I'm sure there's farmers, especially farmers that are growing more water-intensive crops, that might have a different opinion or a different take on it. But I was pleasantly surprised, and I just hope that that can be kind of a shift within the farming community. I mean, California is pretty dry, and we should probably be shifting towards crops that don't need quite as much water.
Winkleman had this to say in regards to a release date for their Sacramento Source to Sea film, along with the themes that have emerged from their experience.
So we're hoping to have it done late fall so that we can submit it to some film fest. And the themes that have kind of emerged through the trip and then kind of our processing of the trip in the last week or so is definitely one of hope. We spoke to a lot of folks that are suffering like pretty serious consequences from water allotment issues and face like potentially really dire situations like with the Delta Tunnel. So despite these really big issues that people are dealing with, there's still so much hope. And that was really inspiring to us because I think there were quite a few days going through the Central Valley in the levees where we didn't feel a whole lot of hope. So then when we, you know, run into new people, meet new people, we get re-stoked and be like, oh yeah, all these people that are day to day dealing with these issues, they're still hopeful. And so that helped us so much. So definitely a theme of hope, and then community and collaboration. Everyone we met thought what we were doing was so amazing. Half the time we were like, we're just paddling the SAC, but ultimately realized that we were sort of the instigators for this collaboration that can continue to happen and is already happening in some respects between the different stakeholders, but is needed so much in order for any real progress and change to be made.
Winkleman ended our conversation with what you can do for the health and vitality of the Sacramento River.
The best thing that I can recommend and suggest and hope that people will do is get out on the water. It's really special. I mean, it's been heavily engineered and changed a lot, but there's still some magic to be had on that river. And I think the more people can get out on it, whether it's, you know, just swimming in it, kayaking, paddleboarding, fishing, whatever it is, the more that people will want to protect it.
You just listened to a Guillermo Mash Imagining Community interview with Alyssa Winkleman, a member of the Three Women crew of Sacramento Source to Sea, who completed their 21-day rafting expedition on April 3rd at the Golden Gate Bridge. Learn more about Sacramento Source to Sea at sacsourcetosea.com.
For more on the Sac Source to Sea story, visit the project website at sacsourcetosea.com. And check out the rest of Imagining Community's coverage at facebook.com/imaginingcommunity and at anchor.fm/imagining-community. Or search Imagining Community at most major streaming services. It has been a big week for homelessness news in Chico, and that is saying a lot for a issue that has been on the front of everyone's minds lately. Ken Smith has been writing about this topic for the Chico News and Review for years now, and he joins us now to bring us up to date. Ken, what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a huge week. We usually have so much negative to report, at least from the point of view of people seeking humane solutions and treatment of the unhoused. But a few things happened this week that kind of actually were a change of fortune there and some bright spots in this long ongoing saga.
72-hour eviction notices were given last Thursday for the large Comanche Creek encampment, but the circumstances changed and the sweeps didn't happen on Monday as expected. You were there. What happened?
Yeah, so the mood was pretty amazing, and I guess kind of how it went down is, so they got 72-hour eviction notices last week, and that was supposed to be a sweep there Monday morning. It's the last of the big encampments. There's a couple different counts last week. There's about 133 people there before those notices were delivered. It was going to be a big operation. A lot of advocates had planned to turn out at 7 in the morning. But last week there was a legal challenge from Legal Services of Northern California that's been long anticipated, finally came through on Thursday, April 8th. So, that itself didn't stop the sweep, but on Sunday, the day before, Corey Turner from Legal Services also, filed a temporary restraining order that was filed wee hours of Sunday morning, and by Sunday afternoon actually blocked the city and Chico police from conducting those evictions or issuing new 72-hour notices until a hearing on April 22nd. So it also stops them from enforcing some of the other ordinances that are known to criminalize homelessness, like storage of public property and sit and lie. So, and that doesn't just apply to Comanche Creek, but all public property in Chico. So, so as far as the mood at Comanche Creek, the advocates that did show up turned their attention, instead of, you know, arguing with police or whatever, to kind of cleaning up and checking in with campers, and campers were more relaxed. And honestly, that camp at this point is all of the tents are away from the creek and mostly out of the foliage and, you know, fire danger. And it was just, on a Monday morning, it kind of felt like a glimpse of what a well-managed sanctioned campground could look like, which is, you know, a solution that a lot of people are pushing for.
What's the lawsuit look like?
It's a very thorough, it's 31 pages long, and it's a really thorough review and rebuke of actions the city of Chico has taken over the last several years to criminalize homelessness. It succinctly lays out problems with lack of shelter options, which is something that the city has recently claimed that doesn't exist. It outlines violations of plaintiffs' rights under the 4th, 8th, and 14th Amendments, which are unreasonable search and seizure of property, cruel and unusual punishment, and the deprivation of people's abilities to pursue life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And it's filed on behalf of 8 unhoused individuals that represent an interesting cross-section of who you meet out there among the unhoused population. Some of those are populations also that the city council kind of claims doesn't exist. Like, I think 3 of the 8 are campfire survivors. Most are elderly. They suffer from a variety of physical and mental issues, ranging cancer, all kinds of things. So it offers, and it goes into depth about their personal struggles on the streets and their incidents of property being seized, of being cited, of being arrested. So really it's a really good primer actually for, just everything that's been happening around the issues of homelessness over the last couple of years, and especially since the beginning of COVID, the birth of the encampments, and then the city council's change of direction in January to aggressively break those up.
What's next with the lawsuit? How long is this restraining order for?
Lasts until there's a case on the 22nd. There will be a hearing. And so that means that no action would probably be taken out there until at least the 23rd. So if people, it's funny, this 10-day reprieve is I spoke to people out at the camp who they said they were grateful. And just even 10 more days of not having to pack up and run every day and every night is a blessing to these folks.
Any response to the restraining order from the city yet?
I believe they've acknowledged it and said that they'll, follow the restraining order for now. At any point they could give a 2-day notice from what I spoke to Corey Turner, that they're countering and challenge it. That hasn't happened yet. Chances are, I'd say at this point, I can't conjecture, but we'll know a lot more on the 22nd.
You've mentioned there are other developments on the homelessness front this week. What else is happening?
So this kind of the whole lawsuit and restraining order kind of tops off a big week that, as we reported last week on last week's show and in the paper, about just some strange directions the city council was taking, as far as declaring that they actually attempted to rescind the shelter crisis. Started off with Alex Brown pitching a stripped down version of a campground at the BMX track and turned into Cammie Denley basically moving to rescind the shelter crisis. The council got bad advice there. Their lawyer told them that they had every right to undo what they'd done before. And I believe Susie Kokums, when asked, said that it wouldn't affect any funding. Alex Brown did some research in the days following. Turns out it would greatly affect the funding of actual services being actively provided now. And also that the order couldn't be rescinded without a resolution. So basically what they tried to do, thankfully, they weren't able to do.
The reason they'd rescind funding is because the shelter crisis designation qualified various agencies to receive certain monies, and without the designation, that money would no longer be available, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, and it's been in place since 2018, so it's provided funding and continues to provide funding that would otherwise be unavailable. And especially now that you're talking about current services are being funded through that, that could be really problematic. So hopefully that moves in a different direction moving forward as well.
So maybe a brief reprieve from major news for now, but certainly more on the horizon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we'll see what happens after the 22nd. And of course, there's constantly things playing out. And
All right. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
A lot of area musicians have been making music during pandemic times, including Butte County's favorite musical son, Big Mo. The local bluesman has written an uplifting song for the times, one he says is about how strong we all are and have to be. Generations before us also went through hard times and came out strong and built a great country. I know we can all do this together. Here, roll with the punches and watch the accompanying video on Big Mo and the Full Moon Band's Facebook page, facebook.com/BigMoBlues, or listen right now.
Are coming. I know life's thrown you a hard way. So hold on and be ready. I hope you stay. Let it do what's best for you and Mother Nature too. Just keep going and don't look back. You'll be out and stronger than you ever were. But no spring is a coming. Just like your heart and soul, it recovers again.
You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR, 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. With the news from California Governor Gavin Newsom that the state might be reopened by June 15th, comes hope that the return of in-person art and music experiences is not too far away. We still have to keep cases down, hospital beds open, and get sufficiently vaccinated, and hopefully the promise of a return will motivate us all. For now, things are a little more open than they used to be, and during a week when most local galleries are opening new shows, some are even opening their doors to in-person viewing, albeit at a reduced capacity. At the 1078 Gallery, Stories 9, the group exhibit, has been extended through April 19th. And next up is another group show, Imagine Together, Hopeful Visions for Our Future, featuring stories, recordings, short films, dances, paintings, drawings, sculptures, and more, based on the imagination and how it can be used to make the future a hopeful, joyful, inclusive place. The show opens on April 19th, and the gallery is open for in-person viewing at limited capacity. Visit 1078, that's the numerals 1078gallery.org for more information. And at Chico State, the BFA candidates are having some of their culminating exhibits, including Angela Hartsong Redding, Marie Swanson, and Kim Schmidt. All of the shows are virtual, and you can visit the Arts Department's Facebook page at facebook.com/CSUChicoArtDEPT/events for more info, or just look up CSU Chico Art Department at Facebook. And Chico Art Center has Creative Fusion, their annual group show featuring works by Butte County's high school and junior high students. It opens on April 10th, and you can get more information at chicoartcenter.com. The gallery will be open for in-person viewing, but not until May 1st. And in downtown Chico, there is local businesses have banded together for an art walk slash show called What's Bloomin' Downtown, featuring works from more than 30 local artists showcased in the different restaurants and boutiques. Visit downtownchico.com for more information. And the Janet Turner Print Museum has a new show, Singular, Monoprints and Monotypes, a virtual exhibit honoring the expressive and individual qualities of monoprints and monotypes. Visit csuchico.edu/Turner. And over at the Museum of Northern California Art, it's Veteran Voices, Communicating Through the Language of Art, a juried exhibit featuring works by 15 artists, all veterans, including David Hopp, David Smallhouse, and Richard Whitehead. And the museum is now open to in-person viewing with limited capacity, of course, and there will be a virtual tour released as well. Visit Monca, M-O-N-C-A, .org for more information. Thank you for once again tuning in to the Chico News and Review Show, and thank you KZFR 90.1 FM for hosting us each Thursday now at 5 p.m. And of course, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes the show. And remember, the April print issue of the Chico News and Review is out now and available in racks all over Butte County. And you can, of course, find the digital version online at chico.newsreview.com. Take care.